TheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, August 22nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what should be a phenomenal Thursday edition of the show here. Professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com will join me. We'll chat week 3 of the NFL preseason, week 0, and start to take a look at week 1 in the college football season with a handful of game breakdowns for you, some updates on any power ratings adjustments from Brad, and all that type of thing. Second half of today's show, Thor Nystrom from Roto World will join us. Hopefully, he'll join us every Thursday here throughout the season. We had him on once last year. It was a great segment. Hoping we get a lot more of those here this season. We'll chat with him about his strategy for handicapping college football. Also, with that Roto World background, plays college fantasy, very well versed in the personnel, which should make for a very interesting discussion today and also over the course of the season here on Bang the Book Radio. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Got a preview up over there of tonight's Jacksonville versus Miami preseason game. Also, lots of college football content. My week 1 power ratings, week 1 situational spots, opening line report for week 0. We've got all the summer work that we've done, handicapping head coaches in the group of 5 and the power 5, season win totals, conference and division. A lot of the same stuff for the NFL as well. Division by division breakdowns from Danny Borgs. 58% lifetime on sides and totals over the last couple of years. At bangthebook.com for Danny. I know he's working on his week 1 NFL power ratings update as well. Not to mention a tour championship preview from James Mazzola. Got a NASCAR Xfinity Series preview up for you. No UFC this weekend, but we have that on the regular over at bangthebook.com. Soccer, tennis, WNBA, MLB, you name it, we've got it at bangthebook.com. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. Our leadoff hitter is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
That's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday?
Doing well, brother. Good to hear from you again. Good to get back into a rhythm here and get the band back together. How'd your summer finish up?
It's fine. It's Vegas, so I mean, it's just not. It's not like Ohio where you only get 3 months. I mean, it's like 6 months out here. So, it was going well. Typical. I don't think there's ever really an off season, especially with early college football markets and the fact that I do a daily radio show now. So, not much of a summer to be perfectly frank with you.
Yeah, man, you're busy, one of the hardest workers in the business. I'm glad that you take some time out here to do this show with us. And, you know, obviously for anybody interested in Brad's work here over the course of the season, the Powers Picks newsletter is easily the best bargain in the business. You can find that over at BradPowersSports.com. Brad, before we get into the college football stuff here where the games actually start to matter on Saturday, let's chat some NFL. Preseason week 3, the dress rehearsal, but you know, as you look up and down the board here and as you look up and down at what's going on with these teams, the psychology of week 3 seems to have really changed for a lot of these head coaches.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess we start to maybe credit Sean McVay's approach. Started last year, I mean, he just didn't play anybody really all preseason and didn't seem to affect the Rams too much as they made the Super Bowl. And now we have several coaches that look like they're not going to, you know, even play their starters in what has become, at least the prior 2 decades, the dress rehearsal game. So, you know, I think Indianapolis and Chicago are resting starters, not playing anybody. Makes it a little bit more of a difficult handicap, but I still think you have your certain coaches that still value the preseason. I still think you got a couple coaches that could care less. So I think if you're, you know, blindly following that, and again, I don't recommend you blindly follow anything, but as long as you're not bucking some of those, I think you'll be just fine.
Well, and it's so funny, that game 269-270 on Saturday, Chicago and Indianapolis, went up from 3 to 4. Indianapolis comes out and says, yeah, well, we're not playing anybody, and the line craters to 1.5. So, you know, that's the third week in a row in the preseason here that Indianapolis has taken money 0-2 already, and then now you've got this situation here this week. So as you look up and down the board here, Brad, I mean, is there anything you like for week three?
Ooh, I was getting into it. I mean, here's what I tell you. You know, I won't play. So I'm not going to fade, you know, Harbaugh and Baltimore. I mean, John Harbaugh now, I mean, if you follow this at all, you probably know the trend. I mean, the Ravens have won 15 straight preseason games, and Harbaugh's gone 13-2 against the spread in those games with an average cover of 11 points per game, average cover of double digits per game. So even though they're laying a big number, Baltimore, on the road against a Philadelphia team that's going to be resting a lot of guys, and it's a lower total, I'm certainly not fading John Harbaugh. I mean, another guy that I'm not playing on is Dan Quinn for Atlanta. He's now lost 11 straight preseason games and failed to cover all 11 of those preseason games, again, by an average of double digits per game, failing to cover the number. I mean, even though Washington hasn't looked good by any stretch of the imagination this preseason, all the money on the Redskins tonight on that one, and I understand it. So certainly I'm not going to be on Atlanta, and I'm not going to be on Philadelphia tonight. I can tell you those won't be BP Sports picks.
Well, and even as you look to Friday, you know, I wrote a preview over at bangthebook.com of this Bills and Lions matchup, and doesn't seem like Matt Patricia's too interested in the preseason either. Probably not going to play too many guys this week. And you know, this is a line, it's a small flip favorite situation. Detroit was -1, now Buffalo -2. It was pick 'em earlier in the week when I wrote the preview. Not that closing line value means as much in the preseason as it does during the regular season, but you know, that looks like another one. And that's the thing about the preseason here, is that, you know, you do have lower limits and stuff like that, but a lot of times the line moves will tell you what to expect, not necessarily in the game, but probably from the coaches and who they're going to play.
That's a great, you know, statement there. And I'll say this. I mean, let's be perfectly frank. I would say at least 80% of the handle is professional bettors, unlike, you know, the regular season where the public, especially in the NFL betting market, the public can have a say. I mean, they can override even sharper bettors if it's overwhelming. The public's just not betting these preseason games. So I think you certainly have to respect the line moves because a lot of it's information-based, or whether, you know, the starters are being rested or whatnot. So I don't like playing against big line moves in the preseason because I always consider them more often than not to be of the sharp variety. You know, I haven't given this out to anybody, but and the line isn't out yet, but I got one that I'm eyeing, and it's not probably going to come out until tomorrow. I'm going to play Minnesota in the first half against Arizona. Here's why. Number one, a 1 o'clock start time for a preseason game on Saturday. 10 a.m., that means a 10 a.m. start time for Arizona, so that's not ideal by any stretch. You got Mike Zimmer, one of the best preseason coaches out there on the market, and you got Arizona that's looked like dog crap, especially their starting defense. And I don't think Kyler Murray looks too good. And we've seen Mike Zimmer be a little aggressive sometimes when it comes to preseason. We saw how well that didn't work out for Arizona when Oakland, another good coach in the preseason, John Gruden, came after Kyler Murray. So I think the line's going to be high, but I'm thinking Minnesota can dominate Arizona, especially in that first half. Even if the line's the same, the first half line's the same as the full game line, 6, 6.5, I'm going to play the Vikings minus those points because of the early start time and the fact that I think Arizona clearly is one of the worst teams in the NFL.
I like it. I like it. A good little bit of inside info there from Brad Powers before this line comes out. So keep an eye out for this one tomorrow. You know, it'll have to come out tomorrow because of the early start time here on Saturday. But one last thing I guess I want to ask you about the NFL preseason, and we'll transition to college football, because I don't intend to talk much about week four. I mean, in week three, the starters aren't even playing. Absolutely nobody's going to play in week four. So here's what I want to ask you. What can we actually take from the preseason to apply to the regular season nowadays? I mean, at least we would have, you know, maybe one and a half data points with starters playing, you know, a quarter or maybe a quarter and a half in game or in week two, a half to three quarters in week three. Seems like we don't even have that anymore. So is there anything we can carry over from the exhibition games to the regular season anymore?
Boy, not much. I mean, it's going to have to, you know, broader. I don't think we can. I think it's got to be team specific. again, I think Arizona is showing, I mean, offensive line has issues, defense has issues, but personnel-wise, you know, Cleveland, a team that really didn't want to win last week's preseason game against Indianapolis, rested their starters. I think Cleveland at least showed their depth, the fact they won that game on the road. I thought that was a little bit impressive, but, I mean, just generally speaking, I don't think we can take much anymore. The entire market's changed a little bit. I'm not saying that you can't be profitable. I still think it's a very profitable market, but I think handicapping the preseason is completely different than the regular season, and I'm just going to treat the almost like they're two different sports, to be honest with you, Adam.
I guess depth is one important takeaway. I mean, if there are cluster injuries for teams during the regular season, and we know that's inevitable, you know, at least you've got a frame of reference as far as the depth. But, of course, you got to keep in mind, too, that depth may be playing against second and third teamers, whereas in the regular season, they'll be playing against starters. So, obviously,
much different animal.
All right, so let's talk college football then. If you want to finish up, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good, man. I'm just confirming your brilliant takes, buddy.
I appreciate it. Nobody strokes my ego on this show better than Brad Powers, and I greatly appreciate that each and every Thursday here on Bang the Book Radio. Let's go ahead and talk about college football here. And before we get into these specific games, I want to try and hit on five of them, so we'll see if we're in midseason shape or not and can get through these. But the season starts on Saturday. I know you've been doing college football prep work since basically before the national championship game even ended. So any late changes to your power ratings, any late, you know, changes in your thoughts about any of these teams here as we look ahead to week zero and week one?
Yeah, slight changes. And that's the project right now that I'm working on this week, because I'm going to post my updated power ratings here in a couple of days. But I mean, obviously there's been some injuries. You know, Maryland's a team that I've had to downgrade. They lost a couple of starters. Pittsburgh's a team that lost a really key player in their defensive end, Weaver. One of the, you know, a first team all ACC kind of type of guy on a team like Pittsburgh. I mean, even though it's a defensive player, I certainly think his value's worth more than zero, even to the point spread. So those are a couple of teams I've downgraded. Not much upgrades, because I generally, when teams are coming out of spring practice, I like to be optimistic. I mean, let's face it, it's prior to a lot of injuries, suspensions, transfers, and whatnot. So usually, for a lot of teams, generally speaking, my highest power rating is going to be at the start of the season prior to you know, what can happen. Obviously, there's going to be teams that I've upgraded that, you know, after that I've seen them a couple of games. But that is what I'm going through now, Adam, and it's an extensive list of guys that have been out. But slight tweaks. I don't anticipate. I'm pretty confident in my power ratings. I mean, I spent all spring and early summer on them, and made several bets off of them, obviously. I don't anticipate, unless we get quarterback injuries, me moving any teams more than a point.
Now, something I do want to touch on here real quickly, obviously you have utmost confidence in the work that you do, and you spend a lot of man hours doing it. So you do tend to dig in with some positions, I would presume. And this is a question I've asked all of the professional handicappers and pick sellers that I've had on the show so far this week. If you're off from the market by something that you feel is maybe an irresponsible amount, do you dig in and hold it because you trust in yourself, or will you make that adjustment to try and get a little bit closer just so that, you know, you're not too far off base?
Ooh, that's a great question. It kind of depends. You know, most of the moves so far, and I'm not saying my power rings are end all to be all, they're not perfect. No one's perfect, but I would say at least 80% to 90% of the moves so far, at least. I mean, maybe there's a couple of outliers. In fact, I'll probably talk about one here in a second that I've had to adjust my power rating on a team a little bit. I certainly take a deeper look, because more often than not, the line is going to move closer to what I had power rated. So I usually don't adjust there. But if it is off significantly, I don't have a lot of games. I mean, I don't have, I think, a single game that's off like more than 5 points, 4 or 5 points at this point. So it's not like I have anything that's ridiculous out there, but I get worried when anything is off more than 3 points, Adam. And, you know, I'll give you one that I don't think I had a good power rating on this team early on, and it's Houston. It's new coach, obviously, Dana Holgorsen, an exciting player at quarterback, De'Aaron King. I knew all that, obviously. But what I didn't, you know, fully grasp coming out of spring is all these Power 5 transfers that Houston's bringing in. And I've had to upgrade my Houston power rating a little bit to get it closer to that current 24.5 number against Oklahoma.
All right, so as we go through here both this week and next week, we'll see if we find some of those outliers that are out there in your power ratings based on the lines that you've put together. I think both of us are pretty close here on these two week zero games, so we won't spend a ton of time on them, but we will get your thoughts here pretty quickly. Game 291, 292, Florida-Miami, 7.5, Florida favored at a neutral site. Total now down to 47 out there at Pinnacle, was 47.5, 48, was 50 over the summer. The Jaren Williams announcement, for some reason, taking the total down on that game. So 7.5 and 47 or 47.5 here. What do you think?
All right. I mean, I got Florida 7.6, so no bet there. And Florida's a team I downgraded about a half a point. I mean, they've lost 4 four-star recruits. Since their signing class was announced in February. So, you know, 4 of their top recruits are gone. So some key depth gone there. And they've also had a couple of injuries as well. So Florida is a team that I have downgraded recently in the last week or so, about a half a point. But still, when you neutral site game, I didn't downgrade Miami for Jaren Williams. I was not a Tate Martell fan, and I certainly didn't like the tape I saw of Nikosi Perry last year. So I actually think it's a positive, but I understand why people are betting the under, because they expect Miami to maybe be a little bit conservative with Jaren Williams in his first start. So no bet really on the side. I mean, if it push comes to shove, and I get it, it's an isolated game, it's first game of the season, ESPN, it's two big teams. I mean, I would probably prefer to take the hook there with Miami. Why? Because, I mean, it's tough for me to lay more on a touchdown with a Florida team that I think is at a disadvantage, particularly with their offensive line. Four starters have to be replaced. And, I mean, that would be going up against a very experienced front seven for Miami, led by 3 senior linebackers that have been multiple-year starters. So I don't think I want to lay more than a touchdown with a Florida team that might have trouble scoring. Lean under and the dog in the under, but those are just, you know, pizza bets. You know, pull up to the couch, you know, put a little bit of money on it to enjoy it. Just be happy that college football's back.
One thing I do want to plant a seed in people's minds about, and this is exclusively a hypothetical, and we'll talk about this when we talk about adjusting power ratings and stuff like that. But what's going to be interesting to me about this game, let's say Jaren Williams comes out there and sets the world on fire against a really good Florida defense that was excellent last year, brings back Todd Grantham for a second year. I'll be curious to see the adjustment to Miami going into their next game and seeing, you know, what people do from a power rating standpoint. And, of course, on the flip side, if he plays badly, well, on one hand, you could say he's kind of supposed to. It's his first college start against a team like Florida. But we could also see a reactionary adjustment to that. So that's the most interesting thing to me about this game. I won't play side or total. That's what I want to see is, you know, how does Jaren Williams look? I mean, as a secondary thought, how does Felipe Franks look? But really, Jaren Williams and this Miami team that just hasn't had good quarterback play for a while.
That's an excellent point because, I mean, if he looks really good, I mean, even if they lose the game by a field goal, say it comes down to the wire, Miami looks really good, and it looks like they clearly got an upgraded quarterback. I mean, what are the games that Miami's going to be an underdog in? Maybe at Florida State? And that's really giving the Noles the benefit of the doubt that they're going to be much improved this year. But, I mean, Virginia and Virginia Tech are both at home. I mean, if Williams looks good early, this is a Miami team that, in my opinion, would become easily the favorite. They already are, but they easily become the favorite in the Coastal, and we might be talking double-digit wins for Miami. I'll give you a little wise guy secret. Sometimes the bookmakers are a little asleep at the wheel on these week zero games, and even old Brad Powers, a little sneaky last year after Hawaii pulled an outright upset in week zero as a double-digit underdog last year, I hammered a couple of Hawaii bets because they were still up on the board.
All right, there you go. Something to look at here, and let's see if Hawaii can bring that magic to the table again here. They're a double-digit dog in week zero once again, this time with Arizona in town. This line was 13 or so over the summer. It's down to 11, a couple of 10.5s out there in the offshore marketplace as well. Total up in the lower mid-70s here, 74 type of range. This one got hit early on in the week by one of the well-respected syndicates out there. But What does Brad Powers think about game 293, 294?
In my number's 10, so lean Hawaii. You know, I tweeted this out. I mean, I'm not blindly betting on this trend, but I did find it interesting. The last six times Hawaii's hosted a Pac-12 team, they've covered all six, and they've covered them by an average of 10 points per game. So certainly in those instances where Hawaii gets that rare opportunity to host a big school, they get up for it. But I don't think that's a surprise by any stretch. And then, you know, the other side of that trend is, you know, let's face it, it's Hawaii. Maybe it's not necessarily a business trip for some of these schools, but it better be for Arizona and Kevin Sumlin. That's a big year for him and Khalil Tate, the all-everything quarterback who had a disappointing season a year ago. And on the flip side, you got a Hawaii team, 18 returning starters. I think this is Nick Rolovich's best team yet. Now, the schedule's very difficult for Hawaii. I'm not sure they're going to win eight games like they did a year ago, but and they're dangerous. And I mean, obviously, Hawaii's exceeded expectations, at least in the preseason, in the week, the early week games each of the last couple of years. They're used to playing this week zero. They played and went across the country and beat Massachusetts a couple of years back. And then last year as a double-digit underdog, go on the road and beat Colorado State. So I think Hawaii's dangerous here. But, again, do I have a significant bet? No, just a lean on the Rainbow Warriors.
Well, and I'll – mentioned the same thing I mentioned earlier on in the week here about this game. I want this game to finish right around the number and right around the total because these are both play on teams to me. I like Arizona with a healthy Khalil Tate who could be more of a true dual threat guy after having to develop as a passer last year. And what you just mentioned, this is probably Nick Rolovich's best team. He's got the quarterback in Cole McDonald. The defense did improve by about half yard per play last year. These are both play on teams for me. So I hope Hawaii doesn't win outright, doesn't ruin their numbers the rest of the way like they did last year. I hope this one is boring and played right to the number.
Yeah, that's a good call. And to get a little bit more in the weeds on why, first off, I think Khalil Tate's going to be healthier this year. I mean, one reason is different system last year, why he didn't have as much rushing yards, but also, I mean, he's dealing with a nagging ankle injury. So I do think Arizona's going to be improved on that aspect. You know, you can just blindly look at returning starters for Hawaii and say, ooh, 18 returning starters. Okay, they're going to be better. But here's one area where I think they'll be significantly better. Last year, offensive line, Hawaii had zero returning starters on that offensive line. And they gave up 46 sacks last year, one of the worst teams in the country. This year, complete opposite. All five starters return on that side of the ball. You know, I do up-downs on each position group for all 130 teams. And one of the biggest upgrades for a position group is that Hawaii offensive line. So I agree with you. I think both teams are going to be play on teams. And you're right, Hawaii's value after those first couple games last year went completely through the window. And, you know, obviously they got expensive. And, in fact, after those first couple games, I think they finished the season like 3-9 against the number.
Yeah, they did. I actually threw that into my preview, so I'm glad that you and I are on the same wavelength there. You know, back-to-back double-digit outright wins are definitely going to skew your number, and this is something we can talk about next week too, but similarly, these FBS teams that lose to an FCS team, and there will be some, they'll get thrown in the trash immediately, and we'll have some betting value on them as we go throughout the course of the season here. But let's go ahead and look ahead to week one. We haven't looked at any of these week one games as of yet. We'll obviously have plenty of time to do that next week. But UCLA and Cincinnati is the first game on the board here on Thursday. Game 133-134. Cincinnati, a field goal favorite here. The hook is gone. So UCLA getting a little bit of love going cross country.
And I agree with it. I mean, we just talked about two play-on teams, Arizona, Hawaii. I think these are two play-on teams, especially UCLA, in my opinion. I think they'll be much improved in year two under Chip Kelly. And offensively, they started to show improvement at the end of last season. We're a total mess at the start of the year, including losing as a two-touchdown favorite at home in the opener to Cincinnati a year ago. Obviously, Luke Fickell on the other side has done a tremendous job. He's off a really good season for the Bearcats. And I think Cincinnati is going to be just as good this year, although the schedule is quite tough for them. They got the Buckeyes coming up as well. Agree with the line move, taking the hook away. My line on it right now is Cincinnati 2, so I'd still lean with UCLA on this one. A really good game. I get it. It's not, you know, big-time programs, but that ESPN doubleheader on that opening Thursday night, UCLA and Cincinnati and Utah BYU, if you're a real college football fan, that's a really good start to the season. I mean, and obviously not a lot of blue bloods there, but I think two very competitive matchups, and I'm leaning with the dog in both.
All right, so let me ask you this for argument's sake. It seems like you and I have a difference of opinion, presumably on the UCLA side, because my number is 5
okay.
for this game. Okay, so let me ask
right.
you this. Let's say Brad Powers has 5 here. You know, obviously the line's on 3, so you're getting 4, which is like a quasi-key number. 3 gives you the push, you know, so on and so forth. But the line is moving against you. So obviously some respected people out there do like UCLA. Do you dig in and play – let's say this gets down to 2.5 for argument's sake. Do you dig in and play Cincinnati at that point, or are you looking at this early on in the year? You're still trying to, you know, feel out some of these teams. Your number's -5. The market number's 2.5 and moving against you. Do you still play it?
That's an excellent question. I mean, you got to treat week one probably differently than any other week. I mean, because – look, while I'm very confident in my power ratings, any type of line moves until next week, until the public gets involved, I got to categorize as sharper players, professional money, that's betting, you know, several weeks before the game's being played. I would dig deeper. I wouldn't automatically fire unless I know the other side of the handicap. I mean, for instance, I mean, I know that, you know, other people have Texas higher than me. I have, you know, Texas is an overrated team. If it's one of those, then I'm confident in my number, and I'm not afraid if the market's moving against me a little bit. I'll go ahead and fire away. But, I mean, I'm a little high with – it's a tough question, man. And that's why this industry can be more art than science. I think the answer is probably completely different if it's week 3 or week 4. I think you be confident with your number and you go ahead and fire away. If it's week one, I think you got to dive into it a little more, unless you already know that you've taken a clear position on that team, knowing full well you're going to be much higher or lower on them in the marketplace.
Well, and again, I mean, this is one of those hypotheticals. I don't think we see a 2.5 for this game because I think the professionals have kind of already had their say. The public's going to back the Cincinnati team that had double-digit wins last year. So
ooh,
even
really?
Though you –
you know,
you don't think
get
so?
Or bet on that. I think it will come off with. I think it could go to 2.5. Dinner bet.
All right, but okay. So what's the determining factor? Which sports? I mean, does it have to be consensus 2.5, or just hit 2.5 anywhere?
Oh, the consensus.
Okay.
I mean, anybody.
Well, what determines
can,
the consensus?
But, I mean,
then?
I got like 15 outs myself, so I mean, yeah, I won't play that with you. Consensus 2.5.
All right, we can do consensus 2.5. I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, people know it's the second year of Chip Kelly. UCLA, you know, more of a brand name in college football than Cincinnati. But I just think when you look at what Cincinnati did last year and also the fact that, you know, they beat UCLA comfortably last season, I think you probably get the public love on Cincinnati. So maybe a sharp versus public split game in week one.
Huh. You know, this is how confident old Brad Powers is in his number. My number is like 1.7. I think that's a really good number, so I'm confident if it does anything, it's coming down.
All right, that's fine. We'll do dinner here at some point. I think you still owe me a dinner anyway, so I don't know. Maybe we'll just kind of cancel that one out.
Too confident, cocky on this segment. You know your shit.
I try to. I pretend that I do. I masquerade like I know what I'm talking about. All right, let's see if either one of us knows what we're talking about here in game 137-138, FIU and Tulane. Full disclosure for me up front, I love FIU this year, my favorite season win total over bet. So I'm inherently biased going into this game, but Tulane was 3 coming down to 2, stray 1.5 out there in the marketplace. This is a pretty interesting game for both of these teams, kind of a measuring stick game for both of them, I think, too.
Yeah, another game where if you're a fan of college football, I mean, you can really get a good idea. I mean, when these teams are playing FCS opponents and bottom-level FBS teams, if you're a Power 5 opponent, you just don't get a good gauge on how good these teams are. We will get a good gauge on how good, you know, Tulane and FIU are. I mean, because first and foremost, it's a pretty evenly matched game. I'm a fan of both coaches, Willie Fritz and Butch Davis. As far as experience, FIU's got a little bit of an edge there. You look at starting with Tulane, and they got 13 returning starters on that side of the ball. I have Tulane slightly up in my power ratings from last year's team that went 7-6. Although I think the schedule is among the more difficult of the teams in the group of five levels. So while power ratings wise, I have them a little up. I think they're going to struggle to get to a bowl game this year. On the flip side, I can't say enough of the job Butch Davis has done. And I'm still never going to be – never, ever, ever going to be over the 0-2 national title game. I still to this day think if Butch Davis is coaching the Miami Hurricanes and not Larry Coker, we do not have a national championship in Columbus. So that would have made old Brad Powers pretty happy. But 16 returning starters for FIU. I mean, James Morgan's back at quarterback. Top three rushers are back. They do lose their leading receiver, but everybody else is back on that side of the ball. 9 wins a year ago, and they've exceeded expectations easily each of the last 2 years. And, I don't get all the love for, Florida Atlantic, even though Florida Atlantic's crushed them the last couple of years. But I think FIU is better than Florida Atlantic. And, I kind of do like Marshall a little bit in that division, but it's close between those two teams. Now, my line was closer to 1, so I agree with the line move here. At 2, though, I'm not sure I have a bet. That's a popcorn game where I'm going to sit back, relax, and learn a hell of a lot from the two teams.
Well, and that's the thing for me here. I mean, my number is FIU minus 2, so it's not like I'm substantially off from the market. I guess I'm 4 points off of the market, but I'm not crossing through anything of great significance to the point where I want to go all in and play this one. Now, I probably will because I do have FIU favored on the road, and maybe my Tulane home field advantage number is a little bit different than the market or something like that. But this may be one of those where I say, you know what, I've got a position. Obviously, I'm high on FIU for the year because I'm about a win and a half above what the market is on them. So this is one where I probably want to put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah, if you're a win and a half above the marketplace, I think – I feel you. You're not crossing through any key numbers, but I mean, I hate to tell you this, but sack up a little, man. Get confident. You're a good dude. You know your stuff. Get a bet down, man.
All right, fair enough. I wish I would have gotten the 3 that was out there earlier on in the summer, but so here's another question, I guess, a mechanical question. And again, I like working a lot of these things in for our listeners. Take the 2 or just take the money line or kind of do both?
Ooh.
What do you think there?
Yeah, probably I would do – well, I mean, again, a complicated question. I mean, obviously, beating closing lines long-term going to matter. Every half point matters. But I'll say this. I mean, they matter a hell of a lot more in the NFL than they do college football. A much tighter market the NFL is. But, I would say a little bit of both. I mean, hell, you got FIU favored. And they're not going to knock me for saying this because they actually posted this pick on Twitter to the world. But, I mean, when you got a very, very well-respected syndicate in Right Angle Sports giving it out plus 3, I think, again, I hate to tell you this, man, but, I mean, sack up a little bit. I would go money line. Fuck it. You got minus 2. I'm sorry. And you got minus two on your power rating. Go ahead and let it roll, man. Money line.
All right. Well, there you go. There's Brad Powers' take on
for the 4-letter words.
Well, there's Brad Powers' take on my lack of sack, I guess. So things are off to a very dynamic start here on Bang the Book Radio for these Thursday segments. But it's just great to be back on the air and talking about these things and having actual games as opposed to, all the hypothetical spreads we come up with throughout the summer and all that type of thing. But one more game I want to tackle here, and this is the highlight game of Thursday night for a variety of different reasons. Game 143-144, Utah, BYU, the Holy War, maybe the most hyped Utah team in really the history of Utah football. A lot of people expecting them to win the Pac-12 South, represent the division there in the conference championship game, and a BYU team that I think a lot of us out there in the marketplace do like, and they are taking money here in this spot. We've even got a 4.5 out there at Pinnacle and Matchbook, 2 of the sharper offshores, 5 everywhere else with a total going up now at 48.
Yeah, my number is 3.7. So I agree with the line move here. And I like Utah, but I mean, I liked them to be perfectly frank, I like them early in the betting off-season marketplace. I mean, there was like early numbers, season win total like 8 to win the Pac-12, 10-1. And now it seems like everybody's on that bandwagon. When everybody's on one bandwagon, I like sometimes Adam jump off that bandwagon. I'm not fully off. I still think they're the best team in the Pac-12 South, but let's just go historical perspective here on a couple of fronts. Number one, Utah, nationally speaking, and Pac-12 wise, I mean, this is a Utah team since they joined the Pac-12 have not had a single season where they've lost less than 3 games in conference. So we'll see how Utah handles expectations. They've been a good team that kind of is flying under the radar now with the bullseye on their back. We'll see if for the first time in a while, probably since they joined the Pac-12, we'll see how they handle it. I have a little bit of doubts now if they become almost a very public team. On the flip side, I think BYU, I mean, has been very close. Utah's dominated this series as of late. They've won 8 straight over their rival here, but 7 of those games have been one-score games. So it's not like they've crushed BYU in every single one of those. Last year, they won by 8, but, I mean, if you flip that game on in the third quarter, I think it was BYU 20-0. So I think BYU will be highly motivated here. And this is kind of more of a gut, Adam, on this one. I've just seen this too often. The team that gets all the preseason hype, you know, they're all summer long and really expected to be better than what they've been in several years. I would not be stunned if BYU won this game outright. So I'm clearly on the BYU side.
This is one where I had it closer to the opening number over the summer. I had it more in the 6 range. And again, this is one of those games where I, as bad as I feel about saying this, because I hate one-sided rivalries, unless it's Ohio State and Michigan, you know, I want BYU to play well. I want BYU to win this game. At the same time, I want to play on BYU throughout the year. And if they get this big signature landmark type of win in week 1 over a Utah team with so much hype, it's probably going to eradicate a lot of week-by-week BYU value that we're going to have. So long-term, selfishly for me, I'm hoping Utah wins and maybe does so fairly comfortably. But obviously, you know, this is a great rivalry. I'm glad these two teams play annually again. I'll root for BYU emotionally, but for my bankroll, I'd rather have chances to bet on BYU throughout the year.
Let me ask you, because I got involved on a BYU's week 2 game, and I took Tennessee -3 next week at home against BYU. Yeah, because I really respect your opinion. Any thoughts on that since you're so high on BYU?
I mean, I've got that one right now, Tennessee -4.5 in my, you know, look ahead power rating.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that you're definitely on the right track there. And also, I mean, that you want to talk about awful spots? How brutal is this? Win or lose the Holy War. Then you got to go to Knoxville where it's going to be hot and humid. It's a miserable spot for BYU. So I think you're on the right track there. And I think it's going to be the sharp side for sure.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. I just didn't understand the line. I mean, it was the Westgate opening up. So I wanted to crowdsource and get other people's opinions on that. I mean, I'm confident with my bet, but I just wanted to see what I'm missing there, because I also feel like I'm a little bit higher on BYU than most. I just thought my Tennessee power rating might have been out of whack. But I agree with you, win or lose, it's a tough spot. And it's not a tough spot for Tennessee, who plays Georgia State and has an FCS team in between that game against BYU. So I just didn't get that line. I'm going to be selfish. Since you're being selfish, I would prefer BYU pulls the outright upset. Therefore, I think they're feeling, you know, fat and happy. And with USC and Washington home games on deck, I think they could have that Tennessee game be a throwaway game. So I'm going to be selfish like you. Give me the outright upset. You're going to go ahead and you're going to lay it with Utah, or are you just want to root for the Utes to win the game by 10, 14 points?
I'm probably just going to leave it alone because, I mean, that's going to be smash mouth, physical, brutal football game, you know, and that's another reason to really look to fade BYU the following week. I mean, that's going to be a tough game right out of the stretch where you've kind of been hitting each other, and now all of a sudden you're going to be hitting other people. You know, I mean, it's not like the NFL preseason. You don't get a chance to hit somebody else for, you know, a few weeks. So it's a real interesting game, an interesting setup for both of those teams, especially for a Utah team that, you know, has its sights set on winning its conference and division. You know, they're not going to overlook the rivalry game, but A lot of interesting things about that game. Definitely looking forward to crowdsourcing opinions on that one next week with our Bang the Book radio guests. But Brad Powers over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on off the website right now, man?
Yeah, I talk about it all the time here, and you know, probably for good reason. I'll toot my own horn. Why the heck not? But Powers Picks newsletter. So it's a weekly newsletter. It's monthly during the off season. We've had a ton of already some preseason betting info, whether it be NFL or college football. But during the season, you get an email to you weekly, and here's what you get. Obviously, you get my power ratings in college football, but you get a game write-up on every single college football game. You get a game write-up on every single NFL game. And I know you're going to say, hey, that's all great. You got a lot of information in there. I would say buy it for the information, not necessarily the picks. But if you want to buy it for the picks, and I get it, this industry is all about what have you done for me lately, winners and losers. Well, for your record, 57% combined NFL and college football with a 650-game sample size, 57%. That's lapping the field as far as all the other respected newsletters that have been around for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Better than that, and I also think the information, the power rings, computer projected lines, the trends, everything in there is already better, and then the picks are better, and yet the price is better too, because it's only $79 for the entire season, not week one, not just college, not just NFL, combined. Email to you weekly, college and the NFL, $79 through the Super Bowl. And that's pretty much it. That's my spiel. Powers Pick newsletter.
BradPowersSports.com, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Racking up great betting tips, making side bets with me, getting us FCC complaints. It's been a very exciting segment here with Brad. Always a pleasure, brother. Love chatting with you. Thank you so much for doing this, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, my friend. Take care.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. And again, at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Well, if you want to sign up for any of the contests that are going on in Las Vegas, Westgate Super Contest, Circa Million, Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge, William Hill Pick'em, I think Stations has a contest as well. Vegas Maddie and Tony over at footballcontest.com. They've done a phenomenal job for us over the last several years. I anticipate they'll do a phenomenal job for us again this year with our entries in the Super Contest, the Circa, and the Golden Nugget. Head on over there to footballcontest.com, because if you live outside of the state of Nevada, you need a proxy to put in your picks for you. You can enter the contests, but you have to have somebody put in your picks for you on a weekly basis. So let Maddie and Tony over at footballcontest.com do that for you. Let them know you heard about them on the Bang the Book radio podcast here. They'll take great care of you the same way they've taken great care of us. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is with Thor Nystrom of Roto World joining us here today. Thor, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going really well. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. Great to have you on the program here. And I'm going to make a really bad joke at the start, but I guess we're going to have to start calling this Thor's Day, right?
Oh, let's do it. Absolutely.
Oh, man. Thirsty Thor's Day. I guess we'll call it here for the show. And now that awful joke is out of the way, I got to ask, man, you know, I've been kind of checking in with everybody. I know we had you on the show once late last year. You know, as far as your summer, I mean, do you even get one, or are you just nose to the grindstone with college football all day, all the time?
Yeah, college football, and did a lot of NFL draft stuff this summer too. We ran through every position on offense, you know, through the summer. So I was diving into the quarterbacks for the 2020 class, the receivers, the offensive guards, you know, the centers and everything like that. And then, of course, doing my research for the season. So I'll tell you what, Adam, my first love is college football above the NFL draft. And my sort of side love is betting on college football. So I am very excited that the games are about to start again. We could stop talking about theoretical, you know, prospects or whatever, or, you know, just sort of thinking about these in hypothetical terms. I can't wait for Saturday. We have two very, very fun games on tap.
Yeah, we really do. A lot of fun games on tap for week zero. And then, of course, week one, you know, has its fair share of intrigue as well. Maybe not as many national games as people would want, but a lot of interesting games from a betting standpoint, to be sure. And Thor, I do want to start with this, because you've got a different background relative to a lot of the other guests that we have on the show, the professional handicappers that, you know, do a lot with power ratings, and they're working on this stuff throughout the summer months. You know a lot about the personnel So what I'm really curious to find out is, how do you adapt your knowledge of the personnel to the betting side of the spectrum and, you know, be able to organize your thoughts that way?
Yeah, so, you know, as Adam knows, I listen to Bang the Book all the time. I am looking for information all the time. I'm looking to accrue, you know, all of that from a handicapping aspect, as much data as I can. So in my process, it sort of begins with a sort of analytical side of it, you know, where I set an adjusted line of my own to begin the week. And I have adjusters for that line during the week based on certain, like, market indicators, you know, such as like theme moves or, you know, discrepancies in tickets bought against money wagered, you know, which is another indicator of the sharp side, you know, or potential indicator of that. So I have these 5, 6, 7 little indicators that I will allow to modify the lines for me as the week goes, you know, depending on the way that the market stands on that. So I start with that sort of baseline. And then, Adam, what you're referring to is, yeah, I watch as much college football as anyone I know, you know, I because for work, you know, I cover college football. And so I watch all the games, I cover all the teams year round. And so that part of it, I have to bake in, you know, I can't just be an analytical handicapper. It's not me, first of all, you know, to go all the way with that. But second of all, I do bring that other thing to the table. And so my approach, it sort of tries to blend those two things together, where there's sort of like half analytical side and then sort of like a half old school, you know, grinding the tape, I suppose you could say, kind of a style. And when those two sides of my brain sort of are both seeing the game or a specific game, a specific matchup in the same way, that's when I'm going to sort of load up on that game. So that's how we do the process.
Well, so with the personnel, I mean, are you constructing power ratings the same way in which most of us do, by kind of breaking down the position groups? Or are you just, you know, looking at it on a game-by-game basis and saying, I know there are matchup advantages here at positions X, Y, and Z because you know the personnel? Or is it, you know, do you put that into, do you maybe quantify the value of that personnel?
Yeah, I do. But yeah, for me, the way that my process goes, that's more of the art to it. You know, I know some people, they try to quantify that more scientifically by doing the power ratings, you know, where that's how they do it. For me, even, you know, as closely as I follow the sport, the way that I see it is, I, you know, even though I'm watching a ton of, you know, I have like 6 screens going in every time slot. So I'm, you know, I sort of have like a mini Phil Steele kind of a setup. I'm still not able to watch every game, right? And so I don't feel comfortable sort of adjusting Ball State's offensive line power rating or, you know, Army's linebackers or like, you know, whatever. And so for me, it's more about when I have that background on the team, when I have seen them, you know, when I do have that kind of information. Obviously, I have, you know, returning starters and I have data like that. But as far as really feeling like I can add something to that conversation, I need to have seen it and have a feeling about that. And then that's when I'll bake that in on the latter half of my process. I already have the numbers, you know, the data, you know, with these adjusted lines and stuff that are already, these other, you know, systems and stuff like that are already baking stuff like that in. And so when I can bring something else in extra to try to find an edge, you know, separate from that, you know, looking at that from the outside or whatever, that's where I'll come in with that. But yeah, I mean, it's so important. I feel like, you know, to bake in those matchups, because you can find a lot of edges in that. And sometimes they're edges that other people aren't seeing. You know, even if you're, you know, you have a premium subscription or you listen to a lot of different podcasts, there's certain things that people can miss just because in college football, you don't have to disclose the injury information. You know, a lot of that stuff isn't out there and there's not as much media coverage as the NFL. So it's really a sport where you can win by the more homework that you do. So I try to do as much as I can.
Well, and something else I want to touch on here, and this is something that, you know, I think a lot of us kind of have our arbitrary values for coaches and coordinators and things like that. We know who's a pretty good coach. Maybe some people attempt to quantify it based on record against the spread or, you know, how they do as a favorite, how they do as a dog, something like that. But with studying of that personnel, I think almost by proxy, it fills you in more on the coaches and the schemes and how the personnel fits with what the coach wants to do. I think that can be really advantageous as well.
I agree. Yeah, you both, I mean, that it gives an indicator both of the direction of the program and also the skills of the coaches. You know, for instance, like last year, you know, FSU, you know, Willie Taggart's first year is an abject disaster, right? You know, FSU was kind of a joke, but the reason was because they're terrible offensive line. And that goes back to the last coach. Mr. Jimbo Fisher took a bunch of high-risk flyers on high 4-star offensive linemen that were complete projects. They didn't develop any of them. you know, whether that was because of apathy, you know, as just as far as the coaching staff, or whether they just misfired in the recruiting process, where these were guys that were never going to pan out, but they happened to be big and move pretty fluidly, but they just weren't football players. They take chances on those guys, and, you know, it caused the program to really regress, and Jimbo got out of there, and Willie Taggart's going to have to kind of clean up the mess. But, yeah, different stuff with Miami and their quarterbacks. We're going to be talking about Miami here in a little bit. But the way that Miami has recruited quarterbacks, the sort of the type of quarterback that they have gone after, and then the lack of development of those kind of quarterbacks, obviously that's what ended Mark Richt's time there. We're going to see if Mr. Diaz can come in from the defensive side and fix that with Jaren Williams. That's going to be a fascinating thing to see on Saturday, because, man, is Miami out on a limb for making that decision for reasons that we'll get into, I'm sure, in a little bit here. But, yeah, those things are super important, Adam. And they're things that I think about sort of endlessly. You know, they're things that just sort of fascinate me. Program direction, who coaches target, how they develop those guys, the systems that they use them in, why does it work, why does it not work, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and it should make for a lot of interesting discussion here over the course of the season. And I guess we'll go ahead and apply some of this to these games that are coming up here this weekend and give people more of a tangible idea of, you know, what it is that you're using all of your information and research for. Game 291, 292, Florida, Miami. Again, Miami going with Jaren Williams. And on one hand, you look at this and say, well, shit, the bar is so low at Miami for quarterback play right now anyway. It's hard to see this guy being any worse than they had last year or any worse than what they would have had with Tate Martell. On the other side, yep, you can look at it and say, well, maybe this guy fits Dan Enos, who is a very respected offensive mind out there. Maybe this is the right type of guy to go up against that Florida defense. We don't have a lot of tape on Jaren Williams. Neither do the Gators. So what's your thought process for this game?
Yeah, I agree with that. The Gators don't. And also, you know, it's something that I would tell people is, you know, I've seen Miami get a lot of heat for their, you know, their decision to go with Williams, specifically over Tate Martell. Tate Martell is just the guy that people know, right? He had a very high recruiting rating. He was on that television show. I don't know if it was on Amazon or Hulu or one of them or whatever. I caught a couple episodes, but didn't get all the way to the end. But he was on that. You know, he's been at Ohio State. He's been in the public consciousness. He's got a big personality. And so when Miami, you know, went out and signed him, and it was a buy low signing. You know, it's nothing, you know, it's like in baseball, you know, you have like a reliever who before was a closer and, you know, he's sort of struggled or whatever, but he has a name behind him, you know, just sort of buying low, like at the trade deadline on a guy like that or whatever. Ohio State didn't want him, you know, it was go, you know, I mean, they could not have been more aggressive going after Justin Fields. And I don't think they could have been more aggressive in telling Tate Martell, you can hit the road, Jack. And so Miami comes in and they sign him. But, you know, again, for me, it was a low risk signing. You know, I know that he has the big recruiting hype and it got the fans excited and everything like that. But for me, it was more of a depth thing. You know, it was getting another cook in the kitchen. But I'll tell you this, I trusted, you know, as far as like an indicator of the future, something that has predictive value, I trusted Ohio State's apathy, you know, as far as when Martell was leaving, you know, just, okay, you can go over Tate Martell's recruiting clips. You know, whereas I think the Miami fan base was sort of focusing on his recruiting hype over, you know, Ohio State just sort of telling him to go, even though he'd been in the building for a while there. So, you know, as far as that, I didn't get super duper hyped about that. And frankly, to me, the fact that Miami staff, you know, not only admitted that Nikosi, you know, with his decision, not only sort of admitted that Nikosi Perry is a developmental failure, you know, it sort of seems like they're pulling the plug on that, but also that they admitted to the mistake of signing Tate Martell. Not that it was a mistake, but just that, you know, as far as anyone that thought that he was going to be a starter, just sort of coming out and that's not what he's going to be, and going with Jaren Williams. Going with Jaren Williams, to me, that was the hardest of the three decisions. I think the easiest thing for Miami to have done would have been just to roll out Tate Martell, regardless of how well he did, because the fans would have loved it heading into the week. Now, obviously, if he got eaten alive by Florida's defense, it, you know, their perception would have changed or whatever. But, you know, in these last couple weeks leading up to the opener, I think that was the one thing that, you know, Miami fans maybe were not rooting for, was Jaren Williams winning the job. But to me, that is a good sign. It shows me that Manny Diaz is doing things the right way. He's not like focused on short-term things or perception of the fan base, et cetera. He's focused on trying to win games. And in his opinion, Jaren Williams is going to give them the best chance of winning. Now, like you said, we haven't seen a lot of Jaren Williams, so who knows? Jaren Williams could be Malik Rozier 2.0. or he could be, Nikosi Perry 2.0. It's possible. But the fact that the coaching staff chose him over two options that would have been easier to present to the fan base heading into the opener, to me, again, it's one of those things that's just a little bit telling and a little bit indicative. And in this, I think it's a positive sign. The kid's got tools. He was a four-star recruit. I think he was the 106th player in the ESPN 300 in his class. The reason we haven't heard about him is, again, Malik Rozier, and then Nikosi Perry was the guy, that was seen as the heir apparent. And then after that, they went out and got Tate Martell. So the reason, Williams hasn't been in the public consciousness is just because of that. There's always been other guys to talk about. That doesn't mean that the kid can't play. I mean, he was a Ballyhoo top 150 consensus recruit. I'm very curious to see the way that he plays. But again, I'm more optimistic on this news heading into the opener than I am pessimistic.
Well, and I think what's intriguing about this game in particular is that, Felipe Franks did improve last year. And one of the reasons why I lean Florida, I'm not going to take Florida in this game. It's right on the power ratings number that I have. But one of the reasons I lean Florida is because I anticipate a guy like Dan Mullen to continue that development path for Felipe Franks. I have no idea what Jaren Williams looks like in this game. I have no idea what Jaren Williams looks like for 2019. But I'm still not going to go out there and bet it because – Jaren Williams won the job, as you mentioned. I mean, this is the guy that they went with. Maybe he won the job by default because Martell didn't look very good, but he still won the job in a spot where the optics of the decision were a little bit challenging, as you just mentioned. So maybe Jaren Williams does go out there and have a day. And if he does against the Florida defense, as I talked about previously with Brad Powers, I'm wondering what happens to the perception of Miami at that point, who does play a pretty weak schedule, is pretty good at the skill positions, is always good on defense. This was Diaz's defense last year. If Jaren Williams plays well, all of a sudden the ceiling for Miami is dramatically different. I'm kind of rooting for that chaos, to be totally honest with you.
100%, yeah, and you said it. Miami's schedule stinks. There's so many of these, title contenders that are playing, these really hard schedules, and those are the teams that a lot of people are betting on to win the title. These teams are just brutal schedules. If you're looking at some of those futures, for me, I'm not betting on I'm not betting Alabama to win the title or, stuff like that. I'm just looking to make a couple long shot flyers. And yeah, Miami's in that discussion because what if Jaren Williams is good? People aren't talking about this. What if he's good? We haven't seen Miami have a good quarterback for a little while. So I know, your brain just sort of wants to say it's going to be Rozier and it's going to be Perry all over again. But what if he is good? And like you said, if he is, that ceiling goes from they're probably going to, have an 8-4 season that's going to be super duper boring to could this team make the playoff, right? Because if they beat Florida here in the opener, then you're talking about this gauntlet, UNC, Bethune-Cookman, Central Michigan. They do have to play Virginia Tech, but then they host Virginia Tech, then Virginia, Georgia Tech, Pitt, FSU, Florida International, and then Duke. Folks, that is Miami's schedule this year. If they can come out and upset Florida in the opener, they are a legitimate playoff contender and because of the schedule. That's just what it is. So if you want to get a future bet in on Miami, to make the playoff or to win the title, you want to go really, really long shot. Do I think it's going to happen? No, not necessarily. But if they win this game, they are in a very, very good position where they're going to be favored in pretty near every game down the stretch.
Well, and this is one of those things, too. I mean, right now I have Miami power rated at 78. They're the number 26 team in my power ratings, although effectively tied for 24th with Washington State and Florida State. If Jaren Williams is that dude and they're just running through the ACC, that number against Clemson's maybe 10 or 11-ish in the ACC championship game for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a ridiculous hedge to hedge against a playoff future or a national championship future because they're probably not going to beat Clemson, but at least you're set up to make some profit, which is ultimately the goal of every futures bet that you make. Thor, let's transition over here to game 293-294, Arizona and Hawaii. Arizona, double-digit favorite, 11, the consensus market number out there. A lot of interesting cats to keep an eye on in this game, though.
Oh, yeah. This one, I know the other one's bigger. It's got more ramifications, but the nightcap here is the one that I'm truly looking forward to. I love Hawaii, the Rainbow Warriors on the stadium app, late Saturday night, every Saturday. I love the whole thing, Cole McDonald, the return to the run and shoot and everything like that. And Arizona's another fascinating team. And Adam, I'm curious to get your take on this. But for me, I'm seeing this game different than some people, and I think it's because I see the way these teams seasons played out last year a little bit different. You know, Hawaii finished 8-6, and everyone was thrilled with that, you know, because of the way that the offense had played and everything like that. It was very exciting. They were back in bowl season. They started out 6-1, everything like that. Whereas, you know, Arizona finishes 5-7. It was Sumlin coming in, you know, with his system, Khalil Tate's, you know, high-octane skill set and everything like that, and they were going to take the world over on offense. They had all this returning talent last year, and then, you know, they sort of limped to this 5-7 finish. They had some very embarrassing losses in there, you know, starting Houston, I think, in the opener or week two last year, got blown out by Houston. Then they got, you know, blown out by a couple Pac-12 teams later on in the year, just demoralizing stuff. But, I see it a little bit differently. Hawaii, you know, they finished 8-6. They made the bowl and everything. But that was on the back of this 6-1 start. Well, they were just playing a bunch of cans at the beginning of the season, a bunch of cans who also, you know, you go back to the tape thing with Jaren Williams, these horrible teams that Hawaii started out with last year, they had no tape on the run and shoot offense. You know, I mean, and it seems by the way that they played it, that their coaches weren't showing them the old Cole Brennan stuff or anything like that. Especially you go back to week zero last year when they just ambushed Colorado State, and it was just like, oh my gosh, what are we seeing? We'd heard whispers that they were going to switch to that offense, but it was like, you know, it was like Cole, I mean, you saw, you know, Cole McDonald come out on the field. It was just like, oh my gosh, it's Cole Brennan all over again and stuff like that. You know, so they ambushed him, but it turned out Colorado State stunk, you know, whereas with, you know, some of those other teams that Hawaii beat, whereas, you know, Arizona, they get blasted by Houston. They lost to BYU. Well, the BYU loss at the time looked just absolutely awful, but BYU ended up making a bowl game, you know, and then after a month, so Arizona starts 2-2, then Khalil Tate hurts his left ankle, you know, in game five, and he played through it, you know, to his credit. You know, Khalil Tate is a very tough kid, but he plays, you know, for the next month with this compromised ankle, and the offense went into the tank. Khalil Tate last year was really good in six games, which people don't talk about, and he was awful in six games, which is all that people talk about. The six games that Khalil Tate was awful in, it was the first two games against teams that had very good fronts, you know, G5 teams, you know, and independent with BYU, but they were bowl teams that had good defensive fronts. During this transition where you go from Rich Rod's offensive scheme to Kevin Sumlin's and Noel Mazzoni's, huge offensive shift. You know, people didn't talk about that a lot. It was going to take a little bit of time. So we get through those 2 weeks. Tate played better the next couple weeks. Well, then he gets hurt. And those next four games, he played awful again. But, you know, down the stretch then, he played well, right? Like, you know, they lost some games in there for sure. But, you know, they blew out Oregon, should have beaten Arizona State in the finale. I mean, Arizona really should have made a bowl game last year. I forgot what the score was heading into the fourth quarter, but it was something like, you know, 41-20 or 40-21 or something like that against Arizona State. And then, you know, Arizona just coughed it up, you know, in the fourth quarter, just procession of miscues. And Kevin Sumlin had a major clock boo-boo at the end of that game to lose it. But instead of going 6-6 and then having the opportunity to play some mediocre G5 team in the bowl season to win it and go 7-6, where the perception would have been different, they instead, their season ends at 5-7. Meanwhile, Hawaii beat just all these awful teams to finish 8-6. But I want people to keep something in mind. Last year, against top 100 S&P Plus teams, Hawaii was 2-6. And against teams that were in the bottom 30 of the FBS in S&P Plus, they were 5-0. So that's how Hawaii wins. Hawaii is a team that's like, they're a bully against terrible teams because terrible teams do not have the secondaries to compete with all the different athletes that Hawaii has, you know, in this system where the receivers sort of get to freelance their routes and everything like that. And they always have the defense on the heels. If you can't get a pass rush on them and you don't have athletes to match with those receivers. But once they started to face defenses that could, and I'm not talking Alabama or LSU, you know, for Hawaii, we're talking more like the BYUs and, you know, teams like that, you know, teams in the MWC that at least had some type of secondary play. They really started to struggle. Now, to be fair, Cole McDonald did struggle with an injury of his own, you know, in the middle of the season or whatever. But their struggles, Hawaii, you can pretty clearly delineate them between the good opponents that they played and the bad opponents that they played. Whereas I feel that Arizona's struggles and the way that their 2018 season played out, the circumstances, it didn't have to do with opponent quality because we saw Arizona absolutely annihilate Oregon. Right. Or, and again, they should have beaten Arizona State, et cetera. It was more about these other things. It was a hard transition to begin with, and then Tate got hurt. You don't want to give excuses because I think, you know, Sumlin and Mazzoni, they both hold culpability here. They did not do well, right? And if it repeats, they are going to be on the hot seat really quickly, and they may even accelerate right beyond that and go into sort of the Jim McElwain zone, you know, where you can get fired before the end of your third season. But I don't think that it's going to repeat. I'm a little bit more bullish on Arizona than I think some other people are just because of these circumstances and my anticipation that, you know, those aren't going to be there this year. And then with Hawaii, it's sort of the other way just because I saw the way that their season played out and they just don't put a scare into good teams, you know.
There's a lot of phenomenal points and a lot of great thoughts in there. And that's something I think is important too, is that, you know, a lot of times when we survey the previous season to put together power ratings or whatever else, you know, we look at returning starters, returning production, all that type of stuff, but we probably don't do enough of what you just talked about with Hawaii, where they beat up on the teams that they were supposed to, the teams that were equal or below them, and struggle with teams that were above them. And there's no Yep. doubt about it that when you look at an Arizona team as a double-digit favorite going to the island in week one, even with Hawaii not being as good at home as they have been in the past, it's still a sign that Arizona is at least a tier or two above Hawaii. I think it's an excellent point. Something that hasn't been brought up here yet so far this week on the show. So, you know, thank you for bringing that to light, but it makes sense exactly what you said there. And, you know, I mean, whether you want to play Arizona in this spot or not, you still have to consider the fact that Arizona is a better team. And when Hawaii played better teams, they had problems. Does that change for this year? I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you go back to Hawaii's wins last year. You're talking Colorado State in the opener. We thought the Colorado State was going to be decent, but it turns out that they stunk. So that win means nothing. They beat Navy, similar thing. We thought that Navy was good last year. Turns out that they weren't. Beat Rice, one of the worst teams in the FBS. Then they beat Duquesne. Then the next week, they go to San Jose State. That was the game where they needed five overtimes to beat San Jose State. San Jose State's basically an FCS team, and they needed five overtimes to beat them. The next week they play Wyoming. Wyoming only scored 13 points. Hawaii is one of the worst defenses in the nation, and Wyoming couldn't crack it. So Hawaii beats them 17-13. Then Hawaii doesn't win again for, I don't know, a month or more. Then they beat UNLV by a touchdown, you know, like great. And then the last game they upset, quote unquote, San Diego State. That San Diego State team was in the tank, and it was a 1-point win in overtime. So like, this thing could have gone the other way, and you tell me what quality opponent they beat. Now they have a Pac-12 team coming in, a Pac-12 team that wasn't great on defense. You know, last year they weren't great on offense either, but they have athletes, right? And Arizona runs a 4-2-5. They, you know, on defense, they're always have five defensive backs out there. That's the way they play. They're designed to play against spread teams. Last year they had a really good cornerback named Jace Whitaker, who was injured on his first series of the season, knocked out for the season. He's going to be coming back this year. Arizona already has a really good linebacking core, you know, in that 4-2-5. They got three guys. One of the guys, you know, is in a lot or whatever. Top two guys are great. The backup's really good too. And those guys are specifically awesome against the run. But the top two guys, you know, reading around this summer, they talked all summer about how the thing that they did this offseason was try to lose as much bad weight as possible and work on their quickness, their fluidity, you know, and stuff like that. The one kid I'm referring to is Colin Schooler, who's a, you know, all Pac-12 sort of star linebacker or whatever. And Colin Schooler is a kid who, you know, as a true freshman came in, played right away and was great. But he's one of those guys who's awesome against the run. And, you know, the coverage and the pass rushing was lagging a little bit, you know, behind or whatever. But this kid wants to be great, you know, and I think he's talked to evaluators. He's talked to his coaches. What do I need to do to make it in the NFL, along with everyone else in his position group? And it seems like that was the feedback they got, you know, him and this Fields kid. And so anyway, they spent this offseason trying to get better at that. You don't want to read too much into that stuff, of course, but just the fact that these linebackers, who we already know are awesome against the run, that they're thinking about that. Because, you know, Arizona as a team was pretty good against the run last year. Their one big issue on defense was they weren't getting after the passer enough. And I think, you know, one way that they can get more of a pass rush is to deploy those two linebackers more as blitzers, you know, in selected situations or whatever. And so just the fact that those guys are already thinking about, you know, this coming season, we want to stay awesome against the run, but we want to create a little bit more havoc in the backfield, and we also want to get better in coverage. Just the idea that they know that that's a weakness in their game, just, you know, that that's sort of implied by the fact that they're going about this work. I think that that's very positive. Arizona secondary, I expect Arizona to be better against the pass this year. You know, they did lose, you know, a very key player last year early on. That's tough. You know, I mean, because it's not like Alabama, you know, losing a corner in week one or whatever, they're going to be able to replace him, you know, with another stud or whatever. Someone was working with, you know, all Rich Rod's recruits. Rich Rod wasn't recruiting great at the end. So it's not like he could just shuttle in another guy who's, you know, going to be an above average Pac-12 starter. So getting back to full strength there, I think that helps. I think it helps that Arizona has a lot of familiarity, that maybe not with the run and shoot, but with, you know, spread aggressive offenses. And the one thing Arizona's got going for them that Colorado State didn't last year is, you know, again, Colorado State went into week zero. They had no idea what they were in for. Now, Colorado State had a terrible secondary too, but they also had no idea what they were getting in for. And Colorado State still, I think they got within single digits maybe at the end. They lost by 9 or 10. So it wasn't like, you know, Hawaii really raced out, but it was a little bit closer at the end there. I just think that Arizona is going to have a much better idea of what Hawaii is going to want to do. Hawaii will not be able to run the ball in this game. So, I mean, I'll just tell you guys right now, they're not running the ball. And so they're going to have to throw. And Arizona knows that they're going to have to throw. And Arizona is going to have a minimum of five defensive backs on the field at all times, you know, and go up from there. And then, you know, they have these really active linebackers or whatever that I think are going to be able to focus more on blitzing in this game and also dropping back in coverage. So I like that matchup a little bit more just because we've seen last year when Hawaii was starting to play those better teams on the schedule, that's when the passing attack really devolved. And that was when they had John Ursua. You know, NFL fans out there will remember that John Ursua was drafted in this past class. John Ursua was a stud at Hawaii last year. I mean, he absolutely ate. He was probably a more valuable player to that offense, if I may say, than Cole McDonald himself. And that's not their only loss. The other big thing going on here that doesn't get talked about a ton is Hawaii's defense is an absolute abomination. It was an abomination last year, and last year they had a guy named Jelani Tavai, the absolute stud linebacker, you know, a guy who, a defender that a program like Hawaii maybe gets once every 10 years, and they happened to have him in his final season, you know, and he didn't play the entire season. He got injured for a little bit, but he played in 8 games. And so they had this guy. He was a top 50 pick in the draft. I think he was, you know, 10th or 11th pick in the second round by the Lions. Obviously, the NFL agreed that he was a tremendous player. And despite that, they finished, you know, as a bottom 20 defensive unit, Hawaii did. And they got shredded by long plays on the reg, you know, both in the running game, both in the passing game. In terms of giving up explosive plays, they were near the bottom. Their defense as a whole finished 118th in S&P Plus defense last year. And then they were 111th in allowing explosive plays to the opposing offense, number 111 against rushing explosion, number 102 against passing explosion. And then this is where I delve into Khalil Tate's now healthy. You know, he's 100% healthy. Kevin Sumlin says his legs are back. It is a night and day difference between this season and what ended up happening last year with the ankle. So Khalil Tate should be back. When Khalil Tate, when he can run, he's one of the most dangerous players in the NCAA. And when he can't run, well, he's just sort of mediocre, right? Because he's sort of planted in the pocket. Is he a great pocket passer? No. Is he ever going to be? No. Doesn't mean he's like a terrible player. He can hit his passes when he's running, you know, because those lanes are going to be open, right? You know, the year before he hit 60%, even though he was a bit rawer as a passer, that percentage dropped a little bit. But last year he was a sitting duck. He was confined to the pocket in those 10 games. The first 2 games, I honestly don't think that someone in Mazzoni had completely gotten the team up to speed. Because when they came out to play BYU and Houston, those teams out-physicaled them. And a part of it was because the Arizona players, even though, you know, a lot of them were more talented than the opposition, you could tell that they were thinking, especially Tate, you know, back there. Because Mazzoni had clearly told them, you stay in the pocket, man. We're going to try to make you a better pocket pass. So he was trying the first couple games, and it wasn't working. And I think, you know, we were going to delve into – that, you know, someone in Mazzoni sort of came in with, this is our ideology. This is what we want to do. We're going to turn this, you know, fabulous playmaker into more of a diverse playmaker where he is also going to be able to shred, you know, teams through the air. And we have multiple years with him, you know, so we can sort of go through the growing pains. I think those first couple games were the growing pains. And I think as those guys sort of started to realize, like, well, we don't have to have it our way or the highway between our polarity and Rich Rodriguez's polarity, where Khalil Tate was running almost as many times as he was passing. Whereas with, Mazzoni and someone the first couple games. You know, the discrepancy was more like five passes or six passes to every run or whatever. I think it was going to start to delve more the other way, where they were going to start to meet in the middle. And, it, you know, it was Khalil, we still want you throwing. We still want you, you know, to stress defenses, you know, vertically and everything like that. But we're going to allow you to run a little bit more. And I think that's what we're going to see this season. It's just the issue last year, I think, when someone in Mazzoni were going to sort of get to that, you know, realization or whatever, that's when Tate got hurt. And when Tate got hurt, it really defanged the offense. And it's not just in – and, Adam, let me I know I'm rambling a bit here, but let me give you some stats because I know I'm sort of speaking in some, you know, generalities here. Though, if you combine those first two games Arizona had with the month that Tate was injured, okay, Arizona went 1-5 in those games. Khalil Tate had a 4-4 TDINT ratio, 52% completions, and he ran for less than 4 yards a carry, okay? In the other six games, you know, it's not a sample size like with Hawaii where you separate it out like this and the strength of schedule and the opponent's strength is much different in both. It's not in this one because in the other sample, you have teams like Oregon in this latter sample. But in these other six games, Arizona went 4-2. Khalil Tate posted a 19-4 touchdown to interception ratio, 60% completions, and over 8 yards per carry if you take the sack yardage out. And there's one other thing here. Khalil Tate, it's not just – he doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? Like when Khalil Tate's great, it's not just that you lose Khalil Tate's great play if he's not great anymore. It's also that it has a deleterious effect on all of his teammates. And so just one example of this in action, you look at J.J. Taylor, who's Arizona's like, you know, small jitterbug, waterbug type running back who can be very dangerous in specific circumstances. You look at him when Khalil Tate was struggling in that six-game sample I talked about, the first two, and then when he was injured. He ran for 479 yards in those six games. You look at the other six games, the other sample where Arizona went 4-2 and Khalil Tate was playing awesome, J.J. Taylor ran for 955 yards in those games. And it was merely because Khalil Tate's legs were back. When Khalil Tate's legs are back, defenses are terrified of getting shredded by Khalil Tate, so they have to do something to compensate. You can't just sit back and let Khalil Tate do what he did to Colorado the year before and break rushing records. You have to do something. And so that's when it opens up the passing game. And obviously it gives more space to J.J. Taylor as well. You know, everything bogs down when Khalil Tate is not Khalil Tate and everything plays up when he isn't. If Khalil Tate is indeed healthy, they are going to be able to name the score on offense. Hawaii isn't going to be able to stop anyone this season unless magically a Jelani Tavai or two fall from the sky. I don't see that happening. Hawaii's defense was awful last year with a defensive talent that was almost generational at a program like that in Tavai. They're going to be worse this year, you know, and then is the offense going to be better? I don't know. I mean, it is year two of a system. You do have a starting quarterback returning. You do have the entire Hawaii offensive line returning. So I'll give them that, but they still aren't going to be able to run the ball. And they did lose Ursua. The guy they're going to replace him with is a guy named Melky Stovall, who flashed as a freshman for Cal. He was playing with Sonny Dykes in the air raid. And then when they switched to Justin Wilcox, Stovall was sort of, you know, he was showing up on milk cartons, basically. He wasn't usable in that system. So he transferred out to Hawaii. I think he's going to be fine. You know, I do think the passing attack is going to be fine. But it's still sort of a one-trick pony. So you have this sort of one-trick pony offense, no defense. Is that good enough to stay within a couple touchdowns of Arizona if Khalil Tate is at least 90% of Khalil Tate? I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, I don't think we're going to find a more comprehensive breakdown here of that Arizona versus Hawaii game. Lots of great stuff, schematics, personnel, you know, obviously the splits with Tate when he's healthy, and then, you know, Hawaii when they stepped up in class. So lots of very, very strong stuff there on today's show. From Thor Nystrom, you can follow him on Twitter at ThorKU. You can also find his work over at Roto World. Thor, what do you got going on over at Roto World right now?
I will be publishing my Against the Spread preview here in about an hour or two here on early Thursday afternoon. So I'll have all my thoughts on Arizona, Hawaii, and Florida, Miami. I just put up an SEC East preview yesterday. And then as the season goes, I'm going to have my Against the Spread preview out every day on Thursdays. And I'm fortunate enough that I hope that I'll be joining you, Adam, every Thursday. So it's going to be a fun season. I'll have a lot of content for you guys.
Well, once again, every Thursday, I guess we're going to call it here on Bang the Book Radio. Once again, Thor Nystrom at ThorKU on Twitter. Appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
There you go. There's Thor Nystrom once again at ThorKU on Twitter, writer over at RotoWorld. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat some college football and some Major League Baseball with Christian Pina, who usually joins us for UFC, but with no UFC event this week, we'll just do some college football and some Major League Baseball with him. And then Brent from DSI Sportsbook, the head risk manager down there, will join us. We'll chat with him about any futures exposure from Sharp Money. We'll talk about week zero here in college football, any week one activity, and also just talk about his job, what it entails, what he does down there at DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.